if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 146. This is our 2021 Sony Open in Hawaii episode. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA Tour action. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
We're all right. We haven't got Barry with us for the ride, but I think we might be able to get Barry next week.
Yeah,
we've got a lot of commitments on at the moment. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We are available on social media, Twitter handles. Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Got a lot of new people come to the group last week, which was good to see.
Yep.
Look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. And I'm now going to ask for some reviews. We're review-less, Paul, so I really need some of you listeners to take the time. It would be fantastic if you could to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. The gravitas of those 5-star reviews, it just really, really helps to drive visibility of the podcast on the Apple Podcasts platform, where it's about 60-65% of all of our listens happen on Apple Podcasts, the old iTunes, effectively. So if you could leave a review for next week, and I believe next week is the first PGA Tour and European Tour show, Paul. We've got it Abu is. Dhabi next week.
We've got Abu Dhabi, yes.
Looking They've thrown to... a few dollars at Justin Thomas to get out there on his private jet.
They have indeed, yeah. Rory's out there. Hatton's... I think I said last week that Hatton was starting in Dubai, but he's listed now for Abu Dhabi as well.
Is he?
So, yeah, good field. Fits and...
It'll be a far stronger field than the American Express.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, best tournament next week on the European Tour. Indeed, sure. Yeah. So if you could leave us a review, it would be absolutely fabulous. It'll only take you 20, 25 seconds to get a review out there. 5 stars, and we'd much appreciate it. We'll read that review out at the start of next week's show, and of course, leave your name and where you live. Right. It's a new year, but things continue.
Well, I knew you
COVID,
were far off, Steve,
lockdowns. Yeah. I read yesterday there's a threat now that they might allow us only to leave our house once a week. I don't know how they police that, but that'll be fun.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
The weather's raining here in the southeast of England as we record this. And another one of my tips came very, very close to winning, but didn't.
Yeah.
And this week it was Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
That bogey on 17, that 3-putt killed him, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It's frustrating when the scoring was so deep, wasn't it? Then you just could not afford to make those kind of mistakes. And
You have to say it's a fantastic tournament, wasn't it? I mean, at halfway, was it like something like 16 players within 2-3 shots? It was carnage, wasn't it?
You could have put a blanket over him, couldn't you? It was that close. Yeah, trying to pick a winner at the halfway point, there were so many in it. But, it kind of did whittle down, didn't it? And, your Ryan Palmer, as you would have expected, kind of didn't push on the Sunday to take the title. Harris English did. Joachim Niemann gave him a proper fright. And, in fact, probably should have won it, shouldn't he, given the chance he had. JT, and after we talked about it on the pod last week, I did have a win-only single on JT as well. So we were both cheering him on. But, yeah, that three putt was a dagger to the heart, wasn't it, at the end?
He's a class act, though, isn't he?
Yeah,
I mean, clearly there, there was the issue on Saturday.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll say about the issue, and it's got nothing to do with Justin Thomas, but with the fact that there are limited people on the golf course now, on the basis that they've definitely turned up the microphones now so you can hear pretty much everything these players are saying. And, you know, there's expletives, there's swear words, there's things that shouldn't be heard on live TV being... And it's because they've turned the microphones up and they want to be able to hear what the players are saying. And the trouble is, when you're under this kind of... It's the workplace, isn't it? It's professional golf. There's a lot at stake. There's a lot of pressure. And when players make mistakes, you're going to hear what players say.
Yeah.
Some will be, you know, some of it will be good and some of it will be bad.
Yeah.
And then, it gets caught on live TV and then it's all, you know, it's all over Twitter. Oh, he said this and, you know, it's all clickbait.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the commentators are constantly apologising for the language.
Yeah.
And it's not just...
John Rahm was swearing like a good one. He was going mad.
It's not just golf fever, is it? You know, you watching a football match, you can hear a lot more than you would ordinarily be able to hear. And, you know, it's the reality, isn't it? It's, it's not worth digging into.
Anyway, that blew up on Saturday, didn't it?
It
was the Saturday, really. I think he bogeyed 4, eagled 5, doubled 6. You know, that double... It was his driving, really. He put a new driver in the bag and he was 40th out of 42 for driving accuracy. Mm. And there were some wild ones in there.
Yeah.
Well, I saw one that hit a cart path and instead of going right into deep, sort of dense trees and bushes that he'd never find the ball, it went left.
Yeah.
He was living on the edge with the driver, Thomas. But he was 4 back. But that's exactly the amount of shots he was back when he won the WGC St. Jude.
Mm.
I thought he would come forward, and I think he likes chasing down. I think he likes chasing down, Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the end, yeah, like you said, Neiman, the Wunderkind, and Harris English. Harris English himself, he won that in a very sort of atypical way. We were talking last week about tee to green and how the tee to green rank was king. And you just said, in a way, Neiman should have won it. And actually, if you look at the way that players had won the Century Tournament of Champions there on the Plantation course, building up to this, he was perfect, really. He ranked 2nd for tee to green, 2nd for approach, 6th for around the green. He was 2nd total tee to green. The fact was, though, and this was the case across both Neiman, Thomas, Palmer, and even Xander, they just didn't quite putt well enough from a strokes gained perspective.
Yeah.
And the one that was putting lights out, who ranked 1st for strokes gained putting, was Harris English, who ranked 15th for tee to green and was 1st for strokes gained putting.
Yeah, which again kind of ties in with the preview from last week with the angle of attack. And yeah, when you've got a winning score of 25 under, you've got to make your putts, haven't you? And you know, clearly you did. And there's a few other eye catchers, I must say. Abram Answer's putting was really good on the week.
Did he rank 2nd or something?
I think an old putting average. He was 4th, I think, and 3rd for strokes gained putting, something like that. Adam Scott's iron play. I think 93% of greens of regulation he got last week. So there's something percolating with Scott because, you know, sometimes you look at his numbers and they're not quite there. But clearly that was good. And before Christmas, I'm sure we'd seen some really positive putting performances from Scott as well. And Sergio showed some good stuff as well. So there's a few players to keep an eye on, I think, over the next few weeks and months. Clearly there'll be more that come out of the Sony this week too.
Answer, 3rd for strokes gained putting, 6.67 across the whole week. He was 3rd behind English and Michael Thompson.
Mm.
He likes a Bermuda green, doesn't he, old Tomo?
Yeah, I'd stuck Thompson up first round leader on Twitter on Wednesday after I'd done a little bit of work on it, and he did absolutely nothing, but he did putt well. He did putt well on the week, so maybe another one to keep an eye on. He can shoot a low one every now and again as well, can't he?
You need the whole package, don't you, to win a round, to win something like that at 25 under.
Yes.
And yeah, you've got to have a putter that's converted, that's actually in very positive strokes gain terms. And as I said, you know, Neiman, Thomas, Palmer, Schauffele, Sung Jae In was 35th the strokes gain putting out of 42.
Mm.
But he was first for tee to green.
Yeah.
And that clearly gets you in the mix, but he ended up four shots shy. I know one that's going to be very, very popular this week is Sung Jae In. Clearly, a PGA Tour winner on Bermuda grass greens last year in Florida, Mr. Im, who is trending amazingly well, isn't he? Second at the Masters and then top five again last week. He's going to win soon.
Playing some good stuff.
Whether it's the Sony Open, I'm not 100%. We will find out on Sunday, naturally. But I don't know what you think about this. I mean, I've had a good look into this. I must say, I have had the... you won't be surprised. I've had the runner-up or top three in this many, many times. And I haven't snared the winner today. So most listeners will be switching off right now. But, of course, we'll talk through the rationale. The Sony Open. I must say, I don't know what you think. Seems to me they're struggling this week to actually fill the actual field up.
Yeah.
Whether golfers aren't prepared to fly all that way out to Hawaii just for one tournament, and they're kind of, you're all right. You know, there's lots of... Victor Hovland clearly said, nah, don't want to stay, I'm going to go home. Patrick Reed claimed that he... What did you say? He got shin splints or something.
Yeah, I think... Because he was in a decent... I backed Reed last week and he was in a decent spot halfway. But yeah, blisters on his feet and shin splints was the official output of it. So blisters you can deal with. Shin splints are a little... I've had shin splints myself.
Yeah,
painful. They are painful. And then it's not a five-minute cure either. It's weeks and months if it truly is that. So we'll have to see how he progresses from here. You know, in Ryder Cup year, that's not ideal because he'll want to be playing as much as he possibly can.
It's a totally, totally different golf course this week. Mm. Wylie Country Club. It's a Seth Rayner 1927 original. Tom Doak's been doing some work around some of the holes, especially the greens. It's been, I don't know, they seem to have two or three new greens every year, and they tend to be very, very hard, unresponsive for that first year, as you get with these greens. 7,444 yards in length. It's not long. Water in play on 5 of the 18 holes. Rough this year is going to be slightly higher at 2.25 inches. The greens are 7,100 square feet, Tiff Dwarf Bermuda grass. And that number has gone up, which would suggest that the greens that Doak is installing are larger than the originals.
Yeah.
Used to be 6'2", I think it was, or 6'3". That's now jumped to 7,100 square feet average.
Yeah.
The greens themselves, they're this really gnarly Tiff Dwarf Bermuda grass.
Mm.
I believe they've got Tiff Dwarf Bermuda grass at Sea Island, where they play the RSM Classic.
Yep.
And they've also got Tiff Dwarf, or they used to have Tiff Dwarf, at the old PGA West venue where they're playing next week's American Express. But those greens are always overseeded.
Mm.
Because clearly, even California desert in January, nice and warm during the day, extremely chilly in the evenings.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just checking, actually. Yeah, there's still Tiff Dwarf Bermuda grass at PGA West, with Poa Trivialis overseed. So, players that have done well at the old Bob Hope, Humana, American Express, that isn't a bad angle. Players that have done well, clearly, at Sea Island, at the RSM, or the Plantation course, they've both got Tiff Dwarf. You're seeing players there that can clearly putt on those gnarly, tough Bermuda grass greens. The difficulty of this golf course, you won't be surprised to hear. We said exactly the same last week, and it's the same with all coastal golf. Doesn't matter if it's just a golf course by the sea or a proper, genuine links golf course, which this isn't. The difficulty of this golf course is purely wind, and there doesn't appear to be any this week.
It's another birdie fest on the way then.
Mate. Well, Kuchar won here 2019, 2 years ago, at 22 under par, and they complained that year that the greens weren't as receptive as they normally are. We've had Justin Thomas, of course, win at a record 27 under for a par 70. And even the likes of Jimmy Walker in 2015, he was at 23 under. Gomez was 20 under. Russell Henley, 24 under. I think again, yeah. What did we have last week? 25 under we saw.
Yeah.
Neiman and English. I wouldn't be surprised if we were in exactly that 22, 25 under par mark.
Yeah, and as you say, a par 70 rather than a 73, so it'll be some super low scoring.
Two par fives, both reachable, and this golf course every year, apart from last year when it was really Wind City, I mean 11 under one, Cam Smith, just throws up tons and tons of eagles. The key to success is fairly simple. Wyalai over recent renewals has been the easiest course for par 5 birdie or better conversion. Indeed, the 9th and 18th holes yielded a whopping 62, 56 and 54 eagles across 2016 to 2018 renewals. Even last year in very tough windy conditions, 32 eagles were scored over the two par 5s. So if you can find someone that regularly makes an eagle or two, useful.
Yeah. Giving yourself a chance on those par fives. So ideally, you're hitting the fairway off those par fives, aren't you? So give yourself a stab at the green. Well, it's not clear. The be-all and end-all, wheel, is it? The fairways at this place.
No. Well, it looks like the rough's slightly up. I think what we're going to get, Paul, is we're going to get fairly... You always seem to get a lot of run on these fairways. I think you're going to get quite firm fairways, balls trickling out into sort of the first cut. If you're wild, you can go out of bounds. No wonder Justin Thomas isn't playing it this year, because he probably knows he's going to be out of bounds on a couple of the drives. He'll be working away on that new driver. I think you're going to get firm, fast fairways, fairly tough rough, but nothing major, and you're going to get those, you know, the Honolulu fire department will be hosing down those greens and they'll be stopping dead. That's what we're going to get. I think I'd be surprised if we don't
make your putts and shoot your 62s.
And that is well, it's clear with this strokes gain data that we now use that strokes gain approach and strokes gain putting are the key factors when it comes to winning around Wyalai. It's undoubtedly a second shot golf course, which ultimately is one with a very progressive putter. Green complexes are pretty flat, but many a player finds the Tiff Dwarf Bermuda grass difficult to putt on. So look for players who are confident with the putter on Bermuda grass and who can convert birdie chances rather than the purest of non-putt ball strikers. And you look at non-putt ball strikers, and the best one I can come up with is Hideki Matsuyama, who is clearly Japan's number one golfer, has to play this, or feels that he has to play this every year because it's Sony, one of the biggest brands in Japan.
Yeah.
And his record here is shocking, because he can't putt very well.
No. Well, he wasn't particularly good last week either, was he?
Had he been on the sarky?
he got himself the right side of par by the end of the week. But it was a struggle.
He was popular, wasn't he, pre-event? He was popular. Matsuyama, yeah. He's going to win, yeah. No. He'd been on the sarky, I think.
Didn't quite happen, did it?
But I'll read through the winners here. Cam Smith, great putter. Matt Kuchar, streaky putter. Yeah, very, very good putter, Kuchar, when he's on it. I'll read you some stats. Going into the event last year, Cam Smith was in the top 10 for strokes gained putting. Yeah, I know it was early season and this, but he's a decent putter, Smith. The year Kuchar won it, previous season, full season, he'd been in the top 30 for strokes gained putting. Yeah? Mm-hmm. The guy that finished second to him, who we were on, at 80-1, a certain Andrew Putnam, clearly finished runner-up, as they all do. He was third in the category of strokes gained putting that particular season. We then go to Pat and Keziah. Now, Keziah is hot fire, as we know. And the season he won, as he entered the Sony Open, he was in the top 40 for strokes gained putting. And that trend just goes on and on and on. Justin Thomas was in the top 25 for strokes gained putting. Jimmy Walker, streaky, streaky putter, yes.
Yep.
The season before, the full season, top 11 in the whole PGA Tour for putts, strokes gained. And the year he won the first one, back in 2014. So he had won his first PGA Tour event at the, what was it called back then? The Fries.com Open or something like that. That was his first ever PGA Tour success. We're on board at 40 to 1. That was in 2013, but it was the first tournament of the season. You get where I'm coming from. He'd finished then 12th at Summerlin, 6th at the CIMB Classic over in Kuala Lumpur, 44th at the WGC, 21st the week before at Kapalua. He was in strokes gained metrics, he was 3rd for strokes gained putting as he arrived at Waialae, and he won his second tournament in 4 outings to win at 40 to 1. The first time he won this in 14 and 15. So this to me, and the way I work this is, I'm looking for natural, strong putters who are entering this week with a bit of confidence with the irons and a regularity of hitting some greens. I think it's as simple as that.
Yep.
You don't have to be long.
No, this with the metrics of the course.
Negates power off the tee completely.
Yeah, it's not that kind of track, is it?
It's positional, isn't it? I'm not even sure it's position. Well, it is positional, but it's like I would rather be 5 yards off the fairway on the right side of the hole than on the fairway with the wrong angle into the pin. That's how this place works.
Yeah, well, it's a less than driver track, isn't it? Effectively, that's you know, if you're talking about a positional track, it's one where you can take a different club from off the tee and put yourself into a spot that you're comfortable with to attack the pins, and you don't have to. You could get away with, I suspect some of the longest hitters could get away with not even putting a driver in the bag if they wanted to, because they could probably navigate their way around without it.
Now, did you say from some of your research last week that you found sources claiming it also favours the draw?
I've seen a few quotes that kind of suggest that that's the case, and I think you can play it either way, but some players will feel comfortable with it. I think the players that automatically pick up the driver for every shot probably don't like it, because it's not that kind of track. Those that prefer, you know, a more of a thinking man's track, a more of a track where you've got to plot your way around and, you know, think about each hole and its on its merits, is one who's going to be more likely to succeed around here. And that kind of lends itself to shorter hitters, because that's generally how they're going to have to navigate anyway. They have to be a bit more creative with the way that they play. Whereas the bombers will often just pick the driver out of the bag and give it a smash and see where it ends up. And I'm not sure you can get away with poor driving accuracy. That's a fact, because we've seen it from the metrics from the last few years. But I think you still got to have a little bit of thought process that goes through how you approach each of the holes. As you said, you could be better off attacking a certain side of the course and settling for being off the fairway instead of having a better line into the greens. I'd err on the side of plotters rather than bombers, I think, in that respect.
Yeah, I think you are right on that. If we look at the strokes gained metrics of this, so I will take, if I could find it, the last 5 winners here. Gomez, Thomas, Keziah, Kuchar and Smith. Average out where they finished that week in terms of their strokes gained skill sets. And then we'll average that out over those 5 renewals. Strokes gained off the tee, 30th place in the field. So that tells you all you need to know, yeah?
Mm.
Not often you see that on the PGA Tour. Last week for Kapalua, I believe strokes gained off the tee was averaged out at 4th. I know it's a short field event, but yes. Strokes gained on approach, 14th. Strokes gained around the green, 22nd. Strokes gained tee to green, 12th. And this is outlandish. Strokes gained putting, 3rd. Five renewals. Smith was 1st. Kuchar was 3rd. Keziah was 3rd. Justin Thomas was 2nd. Fabian Gomez was the outlier. He was 5th for strokes gained putting. 7th strokes gained tee to green. Got to have a hot putter. Victor Hovland need not apply. No wonder he flew home.
He thought better of it once he realised what he was going to do.
He said, what greens have they got at this this Wildlife Country Club? Someone's gone in. Oh, Bermuda grass. Oh, no, no, no. I thought they were Paspalum.
I'm off.
I'm off. I have a theory about Victor Hovland that I'll share off mic with you and where he's going to go well this year in terms of a major.
Right, okay. Make sure you put a post-it note up so you don't forget the week it comes
out. Yeah, I'm going to put that next to the Never Back Ryan Palmer post-it note. My Lord, I came so close to backing Ryan Palmer this week. I was literally sort of going to make cups of tea and talking to my wife, just trying to put myself off it, just anything to avoid Ryan Palmer. Mm. And I managed to do it. I even went to the extent, Paul, where I worked out that Ryan Palmer has not won an individual golf tournament on the PGA Tour in his last 257 starts.
Yeah.
And I should not be backing him at 35-1 to win this one. Well, even though he plays it so damn well.
Yeah. It'd been a long time between drinks for Harris English as well, though, wouldn't it? 7 years, yeah. Was it?
7.5 years.
7.5 years.
It does tie in with one of my tips, actually, yes. I mean, you go this season so far, Sink hadn't won for 11 years, Garcia 3.5, Martin Laird 7.5, Gay 7.5, Streb over 6 years, and now Harris English over 7 years. Mm. So Ryan Palmer could, but a 35-1? Yeah, probably. I'm not really that fussed. Now, that does lead us on to winning prices around here. And this is kind of where I've set my stall. Cam Smith, 55-1. Matt Kuchar, 2019, he was 40-1. He was actually the 11th. He was 11th in the betting market that week, 40-1.
Yeah.
Cam Smith, where would you be at 55s? Probably top 15, yeah, top 16?
Around that, yeah, 16 to 20, that kind of bracket, I suppose.
Patton Kizzire was at 80-1 chance. So I got him here in the top 30 of the betting. Justin Thomas at 14-1. He was 3rd favourite at 14-1. Fabian Gomez was 100-1. 100-1, he finished 6th the week before. Jimmy Walker, 18-1. And then that was the second renewal he won. He was 40-1, the one in 2014. Russell Henley, 100-1. Henley being the only player in recent times to win this without a go on the track.
Yes.
If you look at the last 7 renewals, so since we've gone into this split season structure, 50-1 is the average winning price. If you look over the last 11 renewals going back to 2010, the overall winning price is 82-1.
That kind of sweet spot for punters, isn't it? That kind of 40-100-1 bracket where you can pick, you know, make a case for these players, and they can and do win at that kind of price.
Well, with Patrick Reed withdrawing literally five minutes after I put my tips out, and it was just like I just wanted to avoid Simpson at 12s, Morikawa at 14s, English at 14s. Now English could go bang, yeah. That'd be 3 wins on the trot, wouldn't it? QBE with Kuchar, Century, and then Sony Open. I always had him down for this. I knew he'd be short. I didn't know he'd win the week before, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a perfect golf course for Harris English. Yes. We've seen it in the past with JT.
Yeah.
We've seen Jimmy Walker 18-1. He finished 2nd at the Plantation course the week before. I don't know if he lost in the playoff. Might have done. Can't recall that. It can happen, might happen, but 14-1.
Yeah, I'd be Simpson over English in that respect. And when I'm putting my DraftKings teams together tomorrow and Wednesday, then I expect that's the way I'll play that as well, Simpson over English. But yeah, you never know. Sometimes these players do just hit that absolute top gear, don't they? And can rat off a couple of wins. Oh, as you say, it'd effectively be three wins on the trot, wouldn't it? Because you got the QBE at the back end of last year as well.
Yeah. That clearly helped him last week. He just had that confidence to know, you know, I'd won just the other side of Christmas. I can hang about here. And he wobbled. He was in the final group with Ryan Palmer. He was never going to get much support from Palmer. Was he? Let's be frank.
No.
I mean, I'm looking at Colin Morikawa's splits, and he's an outstanding, prestigious talent. For me, he's probably the best player in the field, Colin Morikawa. I think he's going to do great things in the sport. Apart from his PGA Championship win on his pretty much his home golf course, yeah, in San Francisco, where he was first for strokes gained putting, you just find Colin Morikawa finishing in the top two or three strokes gained putting. It just doesn't happen. Just doesn't happen.
Yep.
Last year here, he was 50th for strokes gained putting. He lost a 0.8 of a stroke each round on his putting.
Yeah.
Just, you know, 14-1 on Morikawa. I just can't take it because he doesn't fit that identikit profile. We're looking for putters here that are great with their approaches. We're not looking for pure, you know, the purest of ball strikers who, when they have a reasonable week with a flat stick, win.
Yeah. No, not if you've got to get to 20 to 25 under, which looks the kind of number in that bracket, doesn't it?
They might contend, they might go very close, but ultimately they don't win. And that's what we found out so far. So, you know, I'm poo-pooing all of these chances. Of the top boys, I was probably closest to Sungjae Im. But again, Im, he's got to putt abnormally well to get the job done. Yeah. I don't know. Hideki Matsuyama, I just go straight over his name. He just doesn't fit. There's some merits with Anser with that strokes game putting performance last week, but again, he's still a tour maiden, hasn't won on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
He's so consistent, though. He's clearly well ensconced in the top 50 in the world. The one I plumped for, the first one I plumped for, which will be Barry's auto bet, is Kevin Kisner. Because Kisner actually last week with his approach play was very, very, very disappointing until the final round. And I think he hit 16 of 18 greens. Just something seemed to click. And sometimes you look at these numbers and when you go back and look at a winner, it's like, his numbers last week were X, Y and Z. And then when you really go granular, you realise, but actually on that particular round, the last round, all of a sudden something switched on, but I didn't spot it. And actually, if I listened, you know, you always look back, didn't you? And, oh, I should have done this, should have done that. Kisner, he's the sort though. He's perfect for this golf course, in my opinion. Fairly straight off the tee. Great approach play with his irons when he's right. And phenomenal, phenomenal putter.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Tiff Dwarf Bermuda grass. You know, he's a winner at Sea Island, isn't he? He won the RSM in 2015. We were on board. His record here is outstanding. I was expecting him to see him in the top 10 of the scoring average per player. But when he first played over here, I think it was like three miscuts on the trot when he was like someone you'd never heard of.
Yeah, doesn't help your averages, does it?
Doesn't help the averages, no. But recently, he's just outstanding around here, isn't he? Fifth, fourth, 25th and fourth in four of his last five starts here. He's due as well, isn't he?
Yeah. It's been there or thereabouts. And as you say, Barry's been keen on him for a while and he came mighty close to the back end of last year, didn't he?
Well, it was Streb, wasn't he? Streb beat him in that playoff. And we haven't heard from Barry since. He's still in recovery mode.
No, I did get a message from him yesterday to say that he was absolutely backing Kevin Kisner, which I think was the most likely thing to happen this week out of absolute.
Cam Smith last year, 10th of the Australian. Cam Smith, 10th of the Australian. I think he cut out there. 10th of the Australian PGAs, 27th at the Oz Open, 60th at the HSBC, fourth outing out, third at the CJ Cup. Kuchar had won the Mayakoba three outings before he won this. Keziah had won the Mayakoba three outings before he won this. Justin Thomas had won the Tournament of Champions the week before. Gomez had finished sixth at the Tournament of Champions and had won the Personal Classic in Argentina three outings out. There's this thing here of players that had gone, they'd even won or gone extremely close at a tournament in sort of near history. The other side of Christmas.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know, you look at Kevin Kisner, what did he do? He lost in a playoff at the RSM Classic to Streber two outings ago. I thought 30-1. There was a bit of 33s. That soon got snubbed. That got bitten. So I got two points each way, 30-1 with Betfair Sportsbook on Kevin Kisner. One thing I must point out as well to regular listeners, Betfred, for their first time in their history, have gone eight places each way of 50 odds on a PGA Tour full field event.
Yep. Yeah, it's just week. A regular event. Yeah, it's a good move, isn't it?
They've done it in majors in the past, haven't they, eight? But they've never done a standard PGA Tour event, eight places each way of 50 odds.
No, I know they've gone to 10 at the British Masters because they sponsor that one. But over on the PGA Tour, on a regular event such as this, it's a good step. It's getting hyper competitive, the each way market over here in the UK, isn't it?
That's six operators this week that are eight places each way.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Does give you.
They always seem to be last out with prices, but I never usually. We don't go live until I see a Betfred price if I can, because they can be standout on price as well.
I
pulled together a top 10 of the predictor model last week. I'll just quickly run through it. Leishman, Kuchar at 9, Neiman at 8, Berger at 7, Keziah at 6, Kisner at 5, Smith at 4, Palmer 3, Simpson 2, English 1. Betfred right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven of those players right now are best price or equal best price with Betfred and eight places each way, 50 odds. Outstanding.
Yep, very aggressive. I hope they continue it because that's the key. Just doing it for 1 week is all well and good. But it needs to be consistent for punters and then we'll see what happens from there.
Clearly, if you are in the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland listening to this podcast, haven't got a Betfred account, there is a current deal at Golf Betting System. If you sign up, bet £10, get £30 in free bets, plus an additional 60 free spins on Betfred Casino. That is available via GBS. We, of course, key terms and conditions also available at the Golf Betting System website. Well worth having, I think, a Betfred account, especially, as you said, if this is going to be their continual promotion on the PGA Tour, why wouldn't you have an account with them? Gives you another option. Right, so I've gone KK.
Yep.
What were your thoughts around players that you're backing?
Yeah, the closest I came was Simpson, but I really just cannot pull the trigger on Simpson for reasons that I've articulated many a time on the podcast in the past, so I've left him alone. The first one I've gone with is Matt Kuchar at 40-1. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talked about players that have got a recent win under their belt, and it was him alongside Harris English back at the QBE just before Christmas. 37 under they got to, which was nine shots clear of everyone else. They were clearly both playing some incredibly good golf, and clearly both making a lot of putts and playing some good attacking, aggressive, and scoring golf. So Harris has got his win. Perhaps Kuchar gets his as well, and he's coming to a track that he's done extremely well on in the past. fourth here in 2002. Since that point, he's got another four top eight finishes. And then he finally won the event back in 2019. What we've often seen with Kuchar, though, is the prices when he comes up to win these tournaments, he's usually absolutely telegraphed the fact that he's going to win, and he's kind of 16 to 1, 18 to 1, that kind of bracket. So 40 to 1, given that he is coming off the back of a win, in inverted commas, on his last start, I thought was well worth taking on.
Yeah, I did contemplate. Worth a dab on it.
Yeah, I think so. 8,400 on DraftKings as well, and he's going to feature in a few of my teams in that as well. Going back to some measurements, we've got nothing from the QBA, of course, but third for driving accuracy at the RSM, so he's hitting the ball straight. Sixth for strokes gained putting. And again, you talked just a second ago about the correlation between the greens there and here. And if you go back to his win in 2019 here, he had won just before Christmas. That was at the Mike Ober Golf Classic. So coming off some hot form previously that year, potentially coming off some hot form this year as well. So yeah, 40 to 1 for Kuchar, I was quite happy to take a dabble on. And that was, again, just as you mentioned a second ago, that was with Betfred, eight places each way. They were top price with that and top terms. So got a decent chance of a an each way payout at least, I think, with Kuchar on those terms.
Yep.
So yes,
I like Kuchar.
Yeah, Kuch for me. I think we've both gone for the same guy after that. So I'll let you take the plaudits with the next one, since it's your preview.
There's no doubt that players who've played at Kapalua last week or the week before the Sony Open have historically had an advantage. But the past 22 champions, 15 had played on Maui the week before. Mm. So 68% of winners had played the Tournament of Champions. Now, I made the mistake last year of only, and this is typically me, when I see a trend, I can't move off it. I typically completely thought, oh, well, no one else can win. It's got to be someone that played last week and didn't. Cam Smith was interesting, didn't tip him. So that was my, that's how I roll. But Cam Smith won this 12 months ago and he beat long-term leader Brendan Steele, who capitulated over the last couple of holes to get Cam Smith into a playoff. Mm. Both of them hadn't played the Tournament of Champions. And if you look at Cam Smith, he played some golf late on in the Australian summer. So I still like the fact that they need to have been busy. But the fact of the matter is that I think since 2010, Palmer, Mark Wilson, Russell Henley and Cam Smith hadn't played at the Tournament of Champions the week before. So if you've got a player that you fancy that showed something towards the end of last season but didn't play the Century Tournament of Champions, it isn't, you know, don't just cross them out. If you fancy them, bet on them. Course experience, though, does seem to be something that you'd want to be looking at. 14 of the past 15 champions had played the Sony Open before, even if they'd missed the cut. That takes me, not that particular part of it, but the part of it that said that you don't have to back someone that played the Century, took me to a player that's hitting tons of greens at the moment, hasn't won for a while, and is putting really well as he enters this tournament. And he's a course winner. So he's a kind of, it's a kind of Kuchar type bet, but I took another player at 40 to 1. I took Zach Johnson.
Something now, percolating with Zach, isn't there?
Well, he played well at that RSM Classic, didn't he?
Yeah.
But also, you look at Zach, he's had major problems. And this golf course, he must lick his chops because it's short. His lack of length makes no difference. Again, it's all about his approach, play and putting. This is the kind of place where a Zach Johnson can win, yeah? Mm-hmm. Clearly, he's a course winner, won here in 2009. His results here at the Sony Open have generated almost $1.8 million. 12th in 2010, 8th in 2014, 9th in 2016, 6th in 2017 and 14th in 2018. I think he's playing some great stuff right now. Since he had that Payne Stewart Award, he shot 61-65 over the weekend to finish 7th at the Wyndham Classic in August. That was his first top 10 finish for 20 months. and he followed that up with 8th at the US Open, 19th at the Shriners, and 6th last time out at the RSM Classic in late November. Zach went out in the Sunday final group with Bronson Bagoon and Barry O'Hanrahan's nemesis, Robert Streb, and he took a triple bogey 8 at the par 5 8th. And he finished 3 shots back of Streb and Kisner, who made the playoff, with Streb destroying Barry's evening. He's close, Zach Johnson.
Yeah.
He's also won twice on his yearly debut. He won this in put it this way. He's won at Kapalua in 2014 on his seasonal outing. And actually, when you look at what he's done on his first outing since 2008, I won't go through the whole string, but I'm reading sixths, firsts, sevenths, sixths. So he tends to come out, and loads of top 20s, he tends to come out quite hot on his yearly debut. So I don't think he'd just have been sitting there doing very little. I think he knows he's onto a good thing. And I thought he'd have been working really hard at Sea Island on those practice TIFF Dwarf Bermuda grass greens by the coast.
Yep.
I just think he's right for this week. And with this trend of crazy long winners who haven't won for a period of time, Zach Johnson fits like a hand in the glove. 1.5 points each way, 40-1 with Betfair Sportsbook. I've seen no interest in him whatsoever. I'm not seeing the price get any smaller, which would suggest no one's punting on him. Probably, he didn't play the tournament of champions. But Zach Johnson, 40-1, I like that.
Yeah, it does feel like a Zach kind of track, doesn't it? And as you say, it's been a while since he won as well, doesn't it?
He was 5th, I believe. I should check these stats before I actually say them. Sorry, he was 3rd for strokes gained putting at the RSM Classic. Behind only Patton Kizzire and Chesson Hadley, of all people. So, yeah, the putter is warm. And he's doing some nice stuff at the moment. Another one of exactly the same ilk has fallen into my lap this week as well. You can get 50-1 if you only want 6 places each way, but he is available at 45-1 with Betfair Sportsbook right now, 8 places each way, on a player who is a fantastic putter and over the last 2 performances has actually started to hit greens regularly. And I think you'll agree on a course last week that is probably, with Augusta National, probably one of the worst courses that this particular individual could play, because he's probably the shortest player on the PGA Tour.
Yep.
Well, he's up there with Brian Gay anyway. Brendan Todd.
Yep. Kapalua just isn't his game, is it? It's... what did he finish, 13th last week? That's a pretty good showing.
13th last week.
Yeah, that's a pretty good showing on a track that just doesn't lend itself to his game. And this is, 600 yards shorter. He hits the ball dead straight, as you said, but his putting has been good. And actually, his putting's been trending from what I've been seeing. He's moving forward, if anything. So should be pretty comfortable coming in.
I don't think, Paul, I've ever seen a driving distance number this small in all the years I've covered this. Driving distance last week, he was 42nd out of 42 at the Plantation course. He hit 87% of fairways, but he blasted it 250 yards off the tee.
That's down
on average.
SSP Chaurasia kind of level.
I think I've actually hit a drive close to 250 on the odd occasion.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It clearly hasn't gone straight, but...
it wasn't kind of Brendan Todd arrow straight, Steve, I don't think.
It was downhill, but even so.
Off the car path.
But the fact of the matter is, that is absolutely immaterial. What Brendan Todd has got, and he's got it right now, is he's got a phenomenal short game. 3rd for scrambling last week. 7th for putting average, so putts per greens in regulation. And from a strokes gained perspective, he was absolutely red hot with the putter last week.
Yep.
He was fifth for strokes gained putting behind Griffin, Anser, Tomo, and Harris English. But he is hitting. He was 23rd for greens in regulation, and at Mayakoba before Christmas, he finished 8th when defending. He was 1st for driving accuracy and 16th for greens in regulation. So we've got a putter here that is playing well from tee to green.
Yeah.
Clearly, no strokes gained data from the Mayakoba Golf Classic was in Mexico. But actually, I would assume with driving accuracy 1st, greens in regulation 16th, I bet his irons were absolutely red hot in Mexico as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he finished 8th overall, didn't he? So, you know, clearly played well.
So he was 8th, yeah.
So, 8th. Go.
No, you go, please. You go.
I was just going to say, he's 4th for strokes game putting for the season to date as well, which is kind of marries into some of the other stats that you've...
What did we say earlier?
Yeah. You've said about some of the other winners here. So, yeah, all good.
8th at the Mayakoba. He was tied 5th at that QBE shootout with Billy Horschel, I think it was. What happened to him? He just totally ejected, didn't he?
Yeah.
Billy Ho. Wow.
Strange one.
Terrible record here, Horschel, for a course that theoretically you'd think suit him. But again, Billy Horschel, is he a natural-born putter? No, he's not. So, yes, Todd, 8th, Mayakoba. Top 5 at the QBE, and then he finished 13th last week. And I think he was in the top... He was in the top sort of 10 all the way through, and he was there or thereabouts. And that Plantation golf course does not suit him into one. Well, he just cannot compete around there. Mm. The other thing with Todd is, don't forget, he won the Mayakoba and the Bermuda Championship in 2019. Won twice, consecutive weeks. Consecutive outings. I think there was a week in between the two. Shot 22 under to win in Bermuda and shot 20 under to win at Mayakoba. Short coastal golf courses. This is, I think, right up his alley this week.
Yeah.
And we've got 30-1, 40-1 and 45-1. Bearing in mind that the average winning price here over the last 7 renewals is 50-1. So I think we're in the right part of the market.
Mm-hmm.
I've also gone for one at 200-1. And actually, I thought 200-1 was a bit of a crazy price for a guy that won 2 outings ago.
Yeah, the odds compilers have got very short memories with some players, haven't they?
Well, they just don't rank them, do they? Mm. 5 top 13 finishes here. 10th, 5th, 13th, 6th and 13th. I would love I'd love a tied 7th with two others this week. It'd be perfect. So 10th, 5th, 13th, 6th and 13th. I've got him 8 places each way with Betfred at 200-1. He's got 5 wins on the PGA Tour. That's equal to Ricky Fowler. I always get that in just to wind Barry out. And I'm seeing wins at 20 under, 18 under, 25 under par. He's won at El Chameleon, the Mayakoba, by the coast. Harbortown, by the coast. Southwind, which I think is, again, another great court comp course. PGA West on Tiff Dwarf Bermuda Grass Greens. And his last win was at the Bermuda Championship in November. Finished, I think, was it 18th or something like that last week? On the fringes of the top 20.
And again, that's not really a...
Sorry, he finished 29th last week, but it was okay. Again, but this guy is just... Brian Gay. What can Brian Gay really do at Kapalua when people are launching it 400 yards onto a green like Bryson DeChambeau?
Yeah.
But this week, 200-1, Brian Gay? Yeah. All over it like a rash. I like Gay. Stuart Sink, these pros know... They've got a win in the bank. If they can get another top 3, top 4 finish, they're pretty much guaranteed then getting into the BMW Championship at the end of the season. And they're starting to earn some really good money in those FedEx Cup playoffs.
Yeah.
So I've got Gay at 200-1, who again, a beautiful, fantastic putter, who started to hit some greens in regulation over his last 2 outings. In fact, he ranked in the top 13 for greens in regulation across the last 8 weeks in my 8-week trackers. So Gay, Todd, Johnson of the Zach variety, and Special KK are my four this week for the Sony Open. Who have you got at a big price? I know you're gonna have somebody.
Yeah, I backed a couple at three figures. I've backed Brandon Grace at 125-1. He was much improved last time out, actually, at the DP World Tour Championship over at the Earth Course. Finished
top 10,
finished eighth, which was good. It actually shown something off the tee at both the RSM and the Mayakoba before that over on the PGA Tour, which was interesting for him. Clearly something percolating, I think. And if you look back at his first event after the new year in history, well, you only have to go back as far as last year because he won the South African Open on his first start of the year. He's got some other decent efforts right at the start of the year as well. So, there's plenty to like. I mean, if you going back to your preview, there's a quote from Matt Kuchar about comparable courses, one of which is Hilton Head. Clearly, he's won there. He's won twice in Qatar on Bermuda grass greens over on the European Tour. Both of those were in January. In fact, if you look at all of his European Tour wins, five of his nine European Tour wins came in January. So maybe there's something biorhythm-wise with Brandon Grace that gets his juices flowing at the start of each year. 13th here in 2017, that is the only start he had. But if he can build on that effort from the Earth Course, potentially there's scope for an each-way payout there. So 125-1 I got with him, and he's still available in that kind of bracket. The other one I've backed is Peter Malnati, 175-1 I backed him at. And again, if we're talking about putters, then he is one of the best almost capable putters out there. He's second for strokes gained putting on the season today. And he loves going low, doesn't he? He loves throwing in a low round. 63 shot at the Sanderson Farms in the final round and finished second there. He shot 62 at the Shriners. He finished fifth. 63 at the Bermuda Championship for the first round. His first round leader there. 65 he shot in the first round at the RSM, and he was third after the first day as well. So, other than that, I mean, the form up to that point looked really good. I remember you backing him for one of those events at the back end of the year as well.
Bermuda, yeah.
Yeah.
I backed him for a couple. He completely threw the dummy out of Mayakoba, missed the cut. But yes, Bermuda, he was first round leader.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and if you look, that Mayakoba is only the only blot really on the on the copy.
Best season he's ever had, I think, apart from the win season in 2015. He's been playing nice stuff, Malnati.
Yeah.
So again, a putter that has been hitting a decent level of greens.
Yeah, absolutely. So 175-1, other than, you know, just for the fact that he missed the cut in his last start, I'm not having that. He was 12th here last year, and he opened with a 72, which is not good enough around here. So he was flirting with missing the cut at that point, but recovered to finish 12th. I see no reason not to back him at that kind of price, 175-1. I shall also take him first round leader, given that he has got this tendency to throw in a silly low round every now and again. Just waiting for some first round leader prices to come up. And of course, Matt Every's playing this week, so Matt Every will be backed first round leader as well, which should be a nice juicy price, 300 maybe, 250, 300 to 1, I'd have thought.
Brandon Grace finished 13th here on his only outing. He was 40th for strokes gained tee to green that week, 10th for strokes gained putting, finished 13th. He then flew to Abu Dhabi. So I reckon he'll be playing Abu Dhabi next. He finished 13th there as well. Yeah. He don't mind some mileage, does he, Brandon?
No. And he's obviously picking and choosing.
He's definitely turning the corner, Mr. Yes. Grace.
Yeah,
I don't know if he wants to get into the Olympics, or there's some. He clearly isn't President's Cup, and he's slumped, hasn't he? But we know that Grace is an outstanding player.
Yeah, as I said, at the back end of the year, there was just this spark with his long game, which looked good, and then he took that forward to the Earth Course, and it was a good performance. It was, you know, in a good strong field over there in Dubai, that was a good effort to finish eighth, and I think, if he can improve on that 13th place finish here from 2017, then he's got a good chance of placing. So, yeah, quite happy to take that on.
I think that's us then.
Well, good.
let's hope for another good week in terms of at least having some contenders in the mix.
Well, let's see if we can get one of them over the line, Steve. That'd be nice. Phew,
Jesus. It'd be nice to get a 5-star review as well from one of our beautiful listeners.
Perhaps we need that winner first, Steve, before we start.
That'd be my perfect week. Landing a winner and getting a whole glut of 5-star reviews from our fantastic listeners. That'd be fantastic. So we'll see how far we get with both aspects of that.
We live in hope.
We do. And let's hope we don't get into another lockdown where we can't leave the house, which is being regularly reported in our national press right now. Thank you for your time, Paul. I know that you're going to be start doing your research very soon for your first European Tour event, the Abbey Derby. Which is absolutely loaded, isn't it?
It is.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's going to be a cracking event. Really good one to get our teeth into. Rolex Series event to kick the season off on the European Tour. And actually, we've got three really good events. We've got that, then the Dubai Desert Classic, and then the Saudi Invitational, which always grabs a few people from overseas. Tony Finau's playing, I saw, at the Saudi International. So
I expect Patrick Reed will be playing once he's over his shin splints as well, and they've greased his palms with a few six numbers of dollars.
Yeah, potentially. I did have a look earlier, and he didn't appear to be on the list, but these things are quite fluid, so we will.
I mean, at least Reed takes the race to Dubai seriously.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does lend his support to the European Tour, which is good, and. Yeah, we'll see how the tie-in with the PGA Tour develops in that respect for a few of the other players over the next months and years, but one to watch.
One last question before we disappear. Mm. Ryder Cup year, Harris English threw his hat into the ring to get into the American team. Give me a player on the European Tour who might surprise us and force his way into the Team Europe this year. Bearing in mind, there's a lot of the old guard, you know, the likes of Stenson. Yeah, clearly Lee Westwood gone completely the other way. Looks like he's going to qualify automatically. Mm. Then you get the likes of a Henrik Stenson, the complete stalwart, and a Justin Rose, whose games they struggle for a period of time. Give us a name who you might fancy to squeak in the Europe team.
Well, the one that springs to mind, and I'm not sure he should be a surprise. Is Victor Perez. I think Perez is the kind of player that can have a good season. I mean, he's well inside the world top 50 now. Mm. So he's going to have access to all of the really big point scoring events and clearly well capable of taking down a decent event as well. So, if you were to list 12 players without looking at any of the rankings, without looking at any of the positions, I don't think many people would name Victor Perez as one of the top 12, but I've got a feeling he'll make it. I've got a feeling he'll develop his season and potentially grab himself a spot. It's going to be hyper competitive, isn't it? Because you're going to have the likes of a Matt Wallace, etc., who are going to be desperately trying to do absolutely everything they can to get on the team, and then as you say, the old guard who would expect to be able to qualified out of rights. And if you've got the likes of a Lee Westwood who could potentially push on and grab himself an automatic spot.
He's got to be close to, or surely. I mean,
don't forget.
Great deal, isn't he?
Yeah, don't forget.
He's into the majors now. He's in the top 50 in the world.
Yeah, the events at the back end of the year won't have counted. So it's a reset from here, and it's going to be a sprint because. Particularly for the first part of the European Tour season, clearly the events are quite limited. So players have got to be playing and they've got to be performing well. So, it's going to be an interesting period of time over the next 9 months or so as they all try and battle for these positions.
The likes of a Thomas Peters, who goes well on those long American golf courses, Peters or... would you have a Peters? Or then you got the likes of Stenson struggling, Rose struggling, Paul Casey hasn't been great, overly great, has he? There's a lot of the European Tour stalwarts who are going through relatively fallow patches. And you've got these young up-and-comers, even the likes of Erasmus, is it Højgaard?
Højgaard, yeah.
I'm not suggesting he could make it. Like you said, the fact that it's a sprint, if they hit these purple patches and can get 3-4 consecutive wins and top threes to and get into WGCs. You just don't know.
No, but they've got to perform at these bigger events. You know, the next week is going to be one of the critical ones because it's Rolex Series event, and it's, you know, there's so many points and so much prize money, OWGR points, the whole shebang next week up for grabs. Yep. So yeah, it's going to focus some minds, I think.
Yeah. Interesting times.
Yeah, indeed.
Right. Thanks for your time, Paul, this morning.
Best of luck.
Best of luck to you. Best of luck to listeners. Again, if you can get us a 5-star review over for next week, it'd be absolutely brilliant. And we will be back, of course, for the American Express on the PGA Tour and the HSBC Abu Dhabi Championship next week. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your support. We'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.